Species unite.
We're already starting to see this happening. Like, there's a leather tannery in Vietnam called ISA Tantec. Leather runs through the blood. But that's what they specialize at. They came out with their own mycelium material. A leather tannery has come out with their own mycelium material. Are they in it? Are they in it for the passion of saving animals and the vegan kind of philosophies? No. They're in it because they're smart people and they've got good scientists and they've been able to create a new product line.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Joey Pringle. Joey is the founder and co-owner of Vishen Factory. Vishen Factory works with brands during product design and their manufacturing stages to help them make the switch to animal-free leather alternatives. Hi, Joey. It's really good to have you here.
No, it's so good to be here, and finally, we found the time to get our schedules aligned.
So I want to talk about Vishen, and I want to talk about you, but I want to start like how everything started, like go way back to pre-Vishen and how you got to Vishen, and then we'll talk about what Vishen is and what you're doing.
So everyone get a cup of coffee, get a tea.
Yeah.
Yeah, long one, but I'll try and keep it short and sweet. So yeah, I'm from England originally. My degree was in industrial design. The third year of my university, I moved to Australia, got into backpack design. That was kind of like my entry point into fashion. So I moved to Canada and lived in Vancouver for 8 years. And then I ended up joining a really sustainably progressive company called Tentree. And at Tentree, they hired me as accessories designer. And with Tentree, my job was design, development, sourcing. And once a year, I'd go to Vietnam and to China. And then kind of where the whole Vishen thing started was my second trip into Vietnam and China. I was meeting with our wallet factory that made our cork wallets. And the wallet factory was super high-end luxury goods factory. We were highly recommended by one of our other suppliers, our hemp supplier, who made our clothing to use this factory. So we trusted them, and we landed on this factory, but Tentree wasn't a luxury brand, and we were getting these like amazing luxury cork wallets made, and the consumer was loving them, but from a margin perspective, the margin wasn't very good. And we said, hey, like, even though the quality is amazing, we just can't keep working with this factory. I was like, hey, I'm going to have to move this entire collection from your factory to Vietnam because of these two reasons. One, the cost is too high. We're not a luxury goods company. And two, we can't be, it doesn't look good on the website to kind of have this vegan collection made by this premium leather goods factory. The owner pushed back and said, hey, can you please keep the business here? Because he really loved Tentree. He loved the idea of planting trees and sustainability. And I was like, it's always interesting when you meet a Chinese factory owner. And in my experience today, it was always hard to meet. They're always quite willing to be sustainable and to be better. But to think that far into the future, this owner really had this vision for like greener manufacturing. And he said he wanted to have more greener clients and he wanted to keep Tentree. And I was like, wow, this is a surprise. We worked out the cost. But in addition to that, I said, hey, like, we just can't, your leather goods image just isn't a good image. And then he went on to explain to me that him and his partner are starting to practice Buddhism and they're bringing in these values into their life. And I was like, well, if you're practicing Buddhism, how can you get out of bed and just like look at leather hides all day? And he said that he finds it very challenging. He finds it tough. And yeah, he wanted to basically eliminate leather from his company, and he wanted to start his factory, and he called it the Green Machine back in the day. And I was just like, wow, I was like, this guy is speaking my love language. He's speaking sustainability. He's speaking about like protecting animals. And I said, okay, let's hold the tentry conversation. Tell me more about this green machine, this green factory idea. And he told me his vision. I was like, well, I love it. What I'm going to do is I'll find a way to keep the production of tentry at the factory. But in addition to that, maybe I can support you as a consultant. Maybe I can find you new brands, find you better materials. And we left it like that. That was 2018. A year later, I was pushing for a senior promotion at Tentree. They finally gave it to me. But at this point, this consulting idea was really blossoming, and there was something quite beautiful happening with this company in China. So before accepting the position at Tentree, I went back to China in 2019, and I said to this guy, hey, I've been offered this position, but I will decline it if you give me a full-time consultancy position. I was like, and then two, I was like, do I want to live in China? Like, I was just on the verge of becoming a Canadian citizen. We talked about everything. And at this point in my life, I was starting to meditate. And I chose to start meditating to have like a clear mind and to be able to make the best decisions possible. And the universe just really provided what I needed in my life. And I wanted to be go on this entrepreneurial journey. And I wanted to do something crazy. I wanted to change fashion. I wanted to do something impactful in my life, and to me there was no better way of doing that than quitting my dream job in China as a designer and moving to China to start a factory. And at the same time, COVID had just hit Wuhan. Like, Wuhan was going through the pandemic, and then I went back to Tentree after this trip in end of 2019 and said, hey, I'm going to turn down the position, I'm going to start Vision. And they're like, you're crazy. They're like, you're going to move to China when there's a huge pandemic? I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. My intuition, my gut feeling was just so strong at the time. I just knew it was where I wanted to be. So I quit my job. I said before moving to China, I'm going to take a time out on life. Just going to come back to the UK, see my family. Came back March 2020, and then COVID just took over England, put us all in the lockdown. What we said with my partners is, instead of starting a new factory from scratch, let's use the pre-existing leather goods factory as a vehicle. We're about 3.5 years in now, but life has changed dramatically. But that's kind of how it all went up until starting the company.
Then Vision begins. Well, explain for people, because it's kind of confusing for people who don't get this whole thing, like what Vision actually is and does.
So Vision is an OEM, so an original equipment manufacturer. So that basically means that you're not a brand, you're not making product for yourself, you support brands and companies to manufacture products. We specialize in the luxury handbag world, so handbags, bags, small leather goods, but we specialize in alternative leather. We're based in China, so we're in Guangzhou, and that's kind of where we were in 2020. I ended up being in the UK for a year and a half, and surprised myself. I was talking to some really, really senior brands, like some big luxury names in Europe. But what I was noticing was, especially in Europe, there's not much of a willingness to work in China. And I understand that because a lot of brands work in Italy, Spain, Portugal. What I was noticing also was just the complications of working in China. Like, there's three main complications of working in China. You've got one, the holistic Chinese image. Just sometimes, if you don't know China, it's hard to trust. I was like, I'm sick of these companies saying we love what you're doing, but we can't work in China. And I was hearing that over and over again. And people always say to me, why did you choose China? Like, why did you start this in China and make life hard for yourself? And I said, well, I didn't choose China. Like, I explained the story, and I explained like the universe chose China.
You're still in China, though.
Company in China won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
The thing with China is, like, in 10, 20 years, will manufacturing be a thing in China, or will manufacturing be Africa? And that's kind of what's happening, is that Chinese factories are closing. Chinese factory owners are investing in Africa. So 20 years from now, we might see all those pre-existing factories in China be turned into tech and offices. And the cost of living in China is becoming quite high now. And the standards are becoming high, and the government is really holding factories accountable. And a lot of factories, because they didn't care about social compliance back in the day, they're not allowed to stick around anymore. And it's not all doom and gloom in China. And it's nice to us to be held accountable by the government. The scary thing is that these behavioral habits are potentially going to go into Africa, where there's going to be no one holding them accountable, and the whole thing will happen again. For us, short term, China's going to be there. China, we had the skill set and the expertise to be able to convert $1 million orders. And then literally last week, I was in Italy, and the same thing, and looking to build a partnership in Italy. I have so many European brands who want to work with Vision, but it doesn't make sense to work in China. They want to keep it local. And I'm sick of turning away business. So what I can do is bring the business to them.
For the factory in Italy, if you partner with a factory in Italy, is this a factory that's producing animal leather goods and then you're going to transition them?
My partners are leather specialists. Because of their Buddhist values, they want to switch over. But having that knowledge of leather gives you the best possible opportunity to switch over. It's not a like for like, but when you had that experience, you can work with the material suppliers to make the best product possible. So number one, having leather goods experience. Number two, you're open to sustainability. So when we talk about sustainability, we're talking about being audited, but having a willingness to be better, like a willingness to look into like improvements in your factory, maybe putting solar panels or putting initiatives, working with your workforce, making sure that they're happy, social sustainability, all these kind of things that, and they might not be doing it perfect, but have that heart in place to care about it. The third is a willingness to learn and understand alternative materials, because a lot of these leather goods specialists, and we're seeing this right now in Italy, for example, a lot of these true, extremely experienced, talented factories working with leather, they see these new materials and they give up pretty quickly because, one, they don't care about them because they're proud leather people, and two, they don't want to see this change. And these materials are extremely complicated to work with, and it's not going to be a plug and play. You have to do R&D, you have to do investment like with your team and training to make it work. So for me, when it comes to partnerships, I need to find a factory that has those three things in place. When they have those three things in place, we can start the pilot. I can start bringing in the materials through my partnership, which is with NFW and Mirum, and we can start strategizing using Mirum at their facility to start doing R&D, testing out the product.
Will you talk about who Natural Fiber Welding is and what Mirum is and your partnership as well?
So Natural Fiber Welding are a material supplier. They have a material called Mirum, and Mirum is the first material that's commercially ready that is 100% animal-free and plastic-free. The materials, the composition is from natural rubber, plant DNA, but their whole philosophy is about being zero plastic, about being plastic-free. Because the catch-22 in this industry is that when you go from leather to alternatives, most of the alternatives right now, to me, it's not a problem because our goal is to move away from leather and you need stepping stones to do that. But in the Apple leathers, the Cactus leathers, the Pinatexes, we support those companies. We will work with them and we will push them. But our brand network are pushing back against us saying these materials have a high content of polyurethane in there. So with all that being said, I've been trying to collaborate with all these companies and create more strategic partnerships. For some reason, NFW understood my philosophy. My philosophy wasn't to bang on all the brand doors, wasn't to approach every single brand. Brands, for the most part, had their own suppliers. They had their own factories in place. My goal was to work closely with a up-and-coming, exciting material supplier who has all the brands approaching them. Unfortunately, for every one brand that knocks on the Vision door, 10 are knocking on Natural Fiber Welding's door asking for Mirum. What I said to NFW is that if you can work closely with a factory before going to the brands, then we can go through all this R&D internally because all they do is make the material. They don't make the finished product. For their material to be a success, they need finished goods factories to make it a success. So I said to them, let's work closely together and then let's open it up to brands all over the world. And then the NFW, all they have to say is, hey, if you want to make a handbag or you want to make a wallet, we highly recommend you go through our partner, Vision.
I was telling you before we started, I just saw the first handbag I've ever seen made of Miram, which is Shaker, when I was in London, and it's stunning.
And that's another thing is you could be 0% plastic and animal free and do everything I just talked about, but if the material is no good and it doesn't feel good, it's like, I mean, that's half the battle. Some of these materials we see have great sustainable stories, but you put your hands on it, and my team in China, the experts, they're like, we can't use this. And it needs to be workable for this industry. And Miram, the performance, it's still in the late stages of R&D. So, I mean, they're still improving, but the hand feel is beautiful, the touch, and in my opinion, one of the most progressive materials on the planet. Product is always going to get made. That's fun. That's just a no-brainer. That's the reality of humanity. They're going to keep making stuff. But if we can make stuff that is end of life is figured out, that's where I get excited about the innovation of product design.
And when you say end of life is figured out, that they're pretty much biodegradable.
Getting to a point where you can either deassemble, take away like the zippers and the metals and stuff like that, find a home for that. And then, you're going into your local composting facility, one better, maybe even going into your green bin at home. This is all on their radar. Right now, it has to go back to NFW. Sure, that from a sustainability perspective, say you're a brand in Australia and you collect all your bags back from your clients, you've got to send them back to the US. But what they're trying to do is to localize this by working with other organizations in other parts of the world to figure out these takebacks. And they're pretty transparent about it, and they're very honest about it, and they know it's not there right now. But this is the thing, this is where greenwashing comes in. People start to talk about stuff that doesn't exist. They're on the journey, they're on the path, and they're on the right ladder. They're climbing the right place, and I'm on the same ladder with them.
They're making products like not just handbags and shoes, but car seats, right?
Exactly,
kind of everything.
They're pretty diverse. And that only is better for us. So BMW publicly are one of their biggest investors. And working with a company the size of BMW, when it comes to their R&D and their testing and their levels of due diligence, that's all being applied to NFW. So they're in their holistic business. That's all being transferred down to everyone else. So the material that we get right now and in the years to come, it's all going to have that information and those tests and all that knowledge coming from these bigger companies supporting them. And then that will come into a bag and go into a belt and go into a shoe, and it only benefits everyone else.
Next gen is coming, right? So, and like, yes, Miram's here, but most of these brands are a couple years out from scaling.
Yeah.
But what do you like? What does the future of animal leather look like to you? Do you think it's going to be gone at some point in our lifetime?
Providing the durability on these materials is proven and executed, and ideally they contain no petrochemicals. It's really going to put the leather industry in a difficult place, in my opinion. Is that going to happen right now? No. Is that going to happen in 10 years? No. 20, 30 years from now, potentially. But I mean, we're already starting to see this happening. Like, there's a leather tannery in Vietnam called ISA Tanatech. Leather runs through the blood. But that's what they specialize at. They came out with their own mycelium material. A leather tannery has come out with their own mycelium material. Are they in it? Are they in it for the passion of saving animals and the vegan kind of philosophies? No. They're in it because they're smart people and they've got good scientists and they've been able to create a new product line. In 20 years' time, they might see a drop off in leather. They've really diversified. They've got this other one. If they can keep getting that up to a better standard, they might get to a point in their business where their mycelium model takes over their leather model. And it's the same in the dairy industry and in the cattle industry and like farmers now. It's like it's not all doom and gloom. Like you've got loads of land. Like diversify and use your land to do something else.
What about brands? It seems like brands are really excited about next gen, but what's the reality?
I've just recently seen this firsthand by being at a trade show in London, is that the brands know exactly what's going on. The bigger brands are doing their due diligence. They're laying out on the table every single material that's happening. They're seeing the swatches. They're doing their own tests on it. Depends on the brand's position. Like these leather goods houses, your Hermes's of the world and stuff like that. Yeah, they're investing in it. They're playing around a bit. They're looking into it, but they're very cautious. I wouldn't say they're excited. They are keeping an eye on it, but they will only switch once it's perfect. And right now, like back to mycelium, a lot of brands were extremely excited about mycelium. A lot of brands were like, you know, like your Hermes's, your Stella McCartney's, your Kering Group's, investing it in those companies. And for one of those companies to go down now, everyone's going to be like, so what the hell happened to this mycelium stuff? That doesn't make anyone excited. That just says, is this going to happen? And short term, what I've noticed, like I was in New York this year speaking at a conference, and what I've noticed is that there's this new shift on like Gold Star leather. Gold Star leather is this, you know, I mean, just bells and whistles around leather goods tanneries. And if you, depends on where you stand in that whole debate, like, yeah, if you're going to use leather, make sure you use the most progressive and sustainably progressive places that are making it. But it's still the same problem. It's still coming from the same supply chain. And
yeah,
to me, it's like I started the company 2020. Me being like visionary entrepreneur, I'm just like, this is gonna about to blow up. I always describe it as Michael Berry from the, you know, the film The Big Short. I describe my position like him. Like I'm betting against leather. He bet against the stock market. Everyone was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what are you doing, mate? Like, don't do that. You're going to lose all of our money. The stock market was meant to crash. The housing market was meant to crash. And he knew that was about to happen. And it didn't. And capitalism and banks, they were able to protect it from crashing. And then all of his investors were like, what are you doing with our money? Like, we want to pull it out. And at this point, he's just like so far down the hole. He's got there's no place for him to turn. I'm like that right now, where like I'm 3.5 years into Vision, betting against leather, putting all of our investment of our team and knowledge and R&D, everything into these alternatives. And now like Milo and Bolt Threads is kind of like what was meant to be that kind of instigator to go, boom, here's one big one, 400 million injected in it. The rest are going to follow. That didn't happen. So now everyone's like, is this going to blow up or not? Like it will have to blow, but now it's like I'm putting them 2 to 3 years away. So
right,
just like in The Big Short, what happened, the inevitable happened. It was just delayed. So for me, we're about, I'd say 3 years away from the whole thing going boom. And when it goes boom, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. And right now, a lot of the greenwashing and a lot of the bullshit is being caught from some of the companies that have come to market quite early. And people know exactly how to position themselves when they do come to market and how to market themselves correctly. I've had people say they want to invest in Vision. I say, I don't want your investment right now. Oh, I need to see material, next-gen materials become commercially ready. And NFW is doing that. So that's kind of why all my eggs are in the NFW basket right now. And we can work with any supplier out there, but we've got goals to hit and expansions to do, and NFW is the one to do that. And I think 3 years, I'd say 3 years, we'll start to see some pretty exciting movements.
Joey, thank you. This, I think it's super exciting, and I definitely think it's going to happen. I don't think the world can, I mean, I think the world has to go in that direction for so many reasons.
It's amazing to see some of these companies that you wouldn't think about even considering it, looking into it. The key is moving forward is to make capitalism more conscious. And the pie is huge, yeah, for everyone to have a slice in it. Investors, good reasons or not, everyone can be have some fun from this.
This is great. Thank you so much. To learn more about Joey and to learn more about Vishen, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and you could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.